Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pokemon's not a sport. It's close, but it's not. Let's say you're playing tennis. If you're playing tennis, you work on your backhand, you work on your forehand, make sure your shots get better, and as they get better, the strategies you employ become different depending on your individual skill and how good your shots are, where you put the ball, everything like that. In Pokemon, whilst there's a whole lot of fundamentals you have to work on, the strategy you employ within the game is the same whether you're the best player in the world or whether you started a week ago, especially when it comes to things like matchups. So, if you're a coach or you're trying to get a coach, what's really important is not what they've done. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many tournaments they've won. It doesn't matter the accomplishments they have. All that matters is, A, they can deliver information really well, especially and in a way that will work for you. And the second one is that what they're giving you is right, because a lot of the strategy is binary. It doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter how good your fundamentals are. It's right or wrong. So you can teach well, and what you're teaching is correct. Sounds like you're a good coach.
Yo, and welcome to the 136th episode of League of Rage Pokemon Trading Card Game Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kevin Clemente, aka Mellow underscore Magikarp. I'm joined today by a very special temporary guest host joining us for like the fifth or sixth time. You are one of the most decorated guests we've ever had. We have the
not enough times.
I mean, we'll have you on more often if you want. The people love the one and only Henry Brand. Henry, how you doing today?
Fantastic. Thank you, Mellow. Thank you. I'm doing great.
As a little bit of a, so everyone knows where we are in time, we were recording this before the Charlotte Regionals, and that's going to be relevant because we're not going to talk about it whatsoever. Although from the past, I would like to congratulate Xander on winning with Mew. Henry, would you like to predict the winner of Charlotte while we're here?
I think Gardevoir is going to come second, and it's going to brick and lose to something. Fusion Mew sounds possible. Yeah, I think I'll congratulate the second place Gardevoir player.
You'll love to see the Gardy believer out here. But anyway, so we are recording before Charlotte Regionals because I made this tweet on the @LakeOfRage Twitter account. You should follow it. Hey, I'm kind of sick of the meta right now and I don't want to talk about it. And so I was thinking, all right, who is not going to Charlotte Regionals? And who can kind of address this thing that we've seen recently on Pokemon Twitter, which if you're not on Pokemon Twitter, congratulations, but people are once again insulting coaching in the Pokemon trading card game. And it may seem like, I feel like Melo, you brought this up on a couple episodes back. Yeah. This seems to happen every, what, 2 months, Henry? Is that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, even Pokemon Twitter is stuck on about like 8 conversation topics. So yeah.
This is definitely one of them, and it will continue to be one of them apparently.
Yeah, without a doubt. We saw VGC just actually had their first discussion on it, so they're coming into their own.
Good for them. You'll love to see that community really growing and evolving into what we are. So yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about coaching, the who, what, why, how. I have a very positive view on it. I assume Henry is going to have a positive view on it as well. And then we're going to talk about improving in the game as well, because I think, Henry, you have some of the most nuanced views on how to improve in the Pokemon trading card game, and that's why I love giving you this platform to share with me so that I can also improve at the game, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, just even before we get into what they've been talking about specifically, at least my experience with, I mean, obviously it's no secret I do coaching. I think I definitely don't advertise very frequently, but it does, you know, I do it, and I've done it for a long time, and I think it's interesting because the first, like, I started because I got my friends into Pokemon, right? Mm-hmm. And to teach them how to play, right? And genuinely, that was one of the first things. And so I essentially, for like a full season, like two of my friends that started, I basically coached them. Like every time, you know, obviously it would end up, we'd test together and stuff, but there always is that element of like, oh, you should be doing this, but how best can I convey it? So mm-hmm. I started off like that. And, you know, my friends that I'm doing well, you know, they got their Worlds invites, stuff like that. But it's definitely informal. And I think there's less obligation because even though it's your friend, it's different. But I think the big thing, at least for me, is that someone's paying me money. That's a big responsibility. Make sure that they're getting something out of it. You know what I mean? Maybe different people have different feelings, but like there are definitely times where like, you know, someone will have to reassure me, like not that often, but like, yeah, like I got something really good out of that. I'd be like, I don't feel if we were that productive today. And they're like, no, it was good. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. So there's a lot from that angle, but what have people specifically been saying about it, Kevin?
Yeah. So from what I've been seeing on Twitter, now I am kind of connected to Pokemon Twitter in that I scroll through it too much, but I will admit that I try and avoid most of the drama whenever possible. But it really seems like we're back in this discourse of you need accomplishments in order to be a good coach. And that's something that keeps coming up. Like, y'all ain't got top eights. Like, what are you doing out here? Like, what qualifies you possibly? And there also just seems to be a bit of an underlying, why is anyone getting coaching to begin with? That seems to be a like, okay, we accept, you know, Henry's a world champion. Azul is a, you know, multiplying IC champion. Like, they can coach. But like, everyone else, why is all this stuff really happening? Why are there so many? Why are there so many without accomplishments? That's really the vibe that I'm getting out of this. And it really seems to be putting down the whole concept of even getting coaching. And I mentioned this in the pre-listen of why this matters to me. So I'm a teacher, right? It's literally my job to help people improve in the subjects that I teach, right? And sometimes that includes getting a tutor. And then also when I started playing the game, I was a late in life player. I was like 27, which is old enough, right? I was like, all right, I got money. I ain't got time. I'm going to hire a coach. So I got coaching when I very first started, and it was leaps and bounds, made me so much better than, you know, going to league. And I'm like, all right, I want to be competitive. And then after like a couple coaching sessions, you know, I was winning league cups. I was getting points at all my regionals, blah, 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 blah. So like, to me, I'm reading all this stuff. It's like, I hate this. I hate this with such a burning passion. And so Henry, that's why I brought you on. Can you share some of your insights for individuals of coaching?
Absolutely. I mean, first let's talk about, we'll address the debate and then we'll go into, I think, discussing coaching in general as a concept. But so there's a couple of different points. There's arguing the efficacy of it. How useful is it actually? There's arguing what you need to be a coach, what makes a good coach, everything like that. As we say, made a video about it, a very short one. I have so many more opinions. This is actually a good place to be able to voice it. But I think the main biggest point is can you coach without accomplishments? So I think that, I mean, what I said in my video is that you have to do two things. You have to teach well, and you have to, what you're teaching has to be right, because Pokemon, the strategies are the same regardless of, you know, how good you are. If you're brand new, if you're playing a certain matchup, you will play it the same way regardless of your like fundamental skill level. And maybe you'll have different scenarios, but you know, if your opponent is playing Giratina, you'll always want to do, and they attack you with Cram, you'll always want to do the same thing in response, like in that situation. So that's like the main contention. And the argument is, I guess, that the real only benefit of accomplishments is that it makes you as someone looking for a coach maybe feel a bit more confident that they will be right, because they have the results that in theory should be gained by being right. But they also could have got the results without being right, because they might be really good at solving in-game situations and playing themselves, but they might not either, you know, maybe they can play themselves out of bad situations. Maybe they can just, they can't explain very well, but maybe they know what's going on. So there is a lot of those little things that could change the answer. Especially when it comes, you could have no accomplishments, but you could also know exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, whilst this is unlikely, but I think people say it's not like a sport, you don't need the athletics, so you should always do well. Yes, but also, like, it's a 9-round tournament followed by a 6-round day two. You could know perfectly what to do, but executing it with stamina is another question. So maybe you're really good at teaching someone with younger what to do, and then they, you know, go in and there you go. Like, some of these sports, you know, reaction speed and you know, critical thinking in the moment. So it all changes.
This podcast is sponsored by TC Evolutions. TC Evolutions offers some of the highest quality trading card games, accessory, including dice, V-Star markers, ability used markers, and more. So if you're looking to win in style, be sure to check out TC Evolutions and use code LAKE10 for 10% off your order. That's LAKE and the number 10. for 10% off your order and help support the podcast. Can I ask a question then? One thing that I had heard when I was first starting, this is what, 2018, 2019 or whatever, someone, I forget who exactly, had mentioned how a lot of the top players don't actually realize what they're doing turn to turn that makes them a top player. Like, a lot of players will instinctively do things either because they played for a decade, or there's just this natural calculation in their head or something that they don't realize they're doing that the average player doesn't do. Is that something that you think is, I guess, even still true, if it ever was true?
Yeah, I think absolutely. It didn't open my eyes. I mean, coaching opened my eyes in this in a massive way, because when you're good at something, when you've done it for so long, things seem quite easy. Mm-hmm. Especially, I think the comparison to a sport is kind of nice, because like, if you've been playing tennis for 10 years, you've got stronger calf muscles than someone who just started a year ago. And so obviously you're going to be better, right? But these kind of things, like, maybe I'd think were really obvious. And then when I start coaching, I'd be like, no, actually, like, I do know what I'm talking about. And I feel like maybe some of this stuff is not that straightforward. And you see how different people think, but also different people make completely different mistakes to the next person. There's a whole bunch of nuance, but I would say by and large, yeah, like, often it's very easy for top players to not know what they're doing, because I mean, this is almost a separate topic, but there is a concept of talent in even in card games. And so sometimes the really talented might not be able to explain how they got there.
I think that's actually something that a lot of people, like you said, struggle to fully grasp, but there are people who are just going to pick it up and be better at the Pokemon trading card game than others will be, right? And it seems so silly, because you're like, every single one of us should be able to get to, let's use Tord as an example. Every single one of us should be able to get to Tord's level. Maybe we could, but it's going to take different amounts of time, different amounts of work, right? Maybe it's going to take one person playing for 18 hours a day, and another person's going to take them 6 hours a day. And for another person, maybe they can get there in, you know, a few years of occasionally playing, because they've just got this back of their hand knowledge that is just absolutely nuts. So yeah, that's, it's something that we don't think about, because you're like, well, duh, LeBron, he's 6'8" and he can jump through the roof. Of course he's good at basketball, but like, there's plenty of people who are like, they look, just look at the game and they're like, well, I automatically know how to sequence. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, that's sick.
Yeah, I mean, and there's so much, you know, there's so much maths to Pokemon, there's so much everything like that. I mean, I started as a child playing chess tournaments. I think I've mentioned that a few times, but I mean, starting from that is an insane, like, place to start from in terms of like strategic thinking, but also sitting down and doing like Swiss tournaments and stuff. Like, I'd already eased into it. I mean, I played for a long time as well, even from now. But often that maybe comes more naturally. But what if you were, you know, you grew up and your hobby as a child was painting, and then you're really into Pokemon cards, and now you're like, all right, but you don't have that pre-existing skill set. And then I think this is important. If you don't try and acquire that, then you're trying to like go in with basically unprepared.
Oh yeah. So I think, as a summary, you're saying that the accomplishments are obviously not necessarily the primary mover of a good coach.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I for anyone who does coaching, and like, I really emphasize that, like, at least I feel that you do have a responsibility. And I mean, I personally as well, just something to mention is that I've gotten coaching once or twice, not in the past, not before I won Worlds, recently. And the reason is that, you know, I don't have like infinite time. If you would have put me in a game and I'm playing a certain deck, I'd be able to figure out what to do. But maybe I don't have the knowledge on hand. Or I might encounter a situation when I'm coaching and maybe I'm not 100% sure. And I should be. You know what I mean? Like, if someone wants my help, I should be sure. And so occasionally, like, I'll, you know, find someone who's like very knowledgeable on a deck. And rather than, you know, play maybe what 10 hours of games that it might take, I'll talk to them, go in with a couple of questions, and feel nice that someone that I trust and respect, and it helps me out a lot. And that's coming from, I feel like I don't need the fundamentals and the sequencing element of it, but just a quick crash course on matchup theory is super useful, even just to double check and give myself some confidence. So I think that's very useful, but you have to make sure you know what you're talking about, and it doesn't matter on accomplishments. But also I think as well, like, make sure you've got, if you don't have that many accomplishments and you do want to coach, make sure you know what you're talking about, and definitely start, like, you know, doing locally and coaching people locally and get some experience, because if you don't have accomplishments, you better make sure that you've got some kind of like draw card and appeal.
Yeah, and you can add to this too, but that's one of my biggest pet peeves when we see this massive, I don't know if pet peeves is the right word, whatever. This massive amount of people, you go to Metafy, type in Pokemon trading card game, and you're just like inundated with names and people, and someone you're like, you play the game? And even if you click on them, you're like, yo, you got, okay, two top 16s in a row, like clearly you know what you're doing. Mm. If you don't know who these people are, no one's going to hire you. So coaches, the biggest thing is you need to put your voice out there somehow. I have seen so many names and it's not even like, I don't know if this person's good or not. And I get asked all the time, not to coach, not anymore. When I used to stream, I got asked all the time, but now it's like, oh, who do you recommend? I cannot recommend most people purely because I've never heard them talk about the game. Like maybe I've heard them on one meta discussion. That's not actually helpful. Like you saying that Mew VMAX is going to be the most played deck, that doesn't tell me anything about you as a coach. Like you need to get out there, work with a content creator, write an article, make your own videos, DM me if you're like, hey, I'd love to talk about this deck I did really well with and talk about the ins and outs. Give something for people to actually know that you know what you're talking about. And I think it's just, we are missing that so much. Out of the 50 people on Metafy, there's like a dozen who you can go find content that lets you know they know what they're talking about, or maybe not, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I hit the nail on that. Is exactly what I was going to say. And I mean, obviously, you can kind of tell that this is the way I've approached things. I should be a coach's coach as well. But basically, like we said, right, you can be a good, you can also, part of the other discussion for coaching without accomplishments and stuff, which I think is totally fine, is that you can be a great teacher, and also people can fit with different coaches differently. So two people might be really great and explain things in different ways, and one might be better for you, the other for someone else. And I think, like you said, getting your voice out there is the way for people to see that. So many of the people, the clients I've got, have just said, you know, we heard you explain this. We liked the way you explained it. We thought we'd learn, get along and learn, and personality wise as well. And that's most of it, honestly. I think it's going to do you much more mileage than just, you know, trying to advertise or putting up like that. Like talk about something, and then people will see if they like that or not.
That's also a good, like, just everyone in their life has been through school. Think of your favorite teachers, right? You liked them kind of regardless of the subject or the way they teach. And they're okay. There's some exceptions to that, I'm sure. But like most people have been like, no, I like them. And I like the subject and what they're teaching. And that's, I think, exactly what you're saying, right? Like, you have to mesh with the person.
I want to share one of my favorite stories. Please. It's happened a couple times now. It's happened a couple times. But I had a student once. And I taught the two kids. And I taught the dad first. Mm-hmm. And then I taught these kids. And one of them, he was, you know, in his teenage years. And he was like, probably senior. And he said, oh. And this is after like an hour of coaching at this point, maybe a little bit more, you know, I think I met him and his dad, at a regional. And then he was like, oh, what's your best placement at a tournament? He asked me, he's like, have you made top eight at a regional before? And I was like, yeah. Like, and so the kid had no idea, right? The kid had no idea that I've, you know, won worlds or anything like that. But the whole time he was super engaged. He was asking me questions. And so he had no idea about my accomplishments, but he still, like, I guess, understood that, like, the stuff that I was teaching him, and I guess we were getting along and having a good time. And then I was like, yeah, like, he's like, have you been to Worlds? And I was like, yeah. he was like, what's the best you've done? And I said, I won it. And he goes, no way. So, like, I think that's a good example of, if you know what you're talking about, then it doesn't matter what your accomplishments are. So
kind of on the other end of that spectrum is the idea that coaching in general is, I don't want to say a scam, because everyone will like allude to it and then kind of backtrack, you know, that like thing people will do on the internet of like, this is the worst, it's terrible, but it's not that bad, to make you kind of like, oh, I'll come around to their side, right? What do you say to people who would say, well, coaching's not actually that helpful, just play the game more, just find friends to play with, and then you'll be fine?
I think it's interesting. Well, it depends. How much time do you have to play? This is what you talked about. Time and money are essentially interchangeable currencies, and you might not have You might not have a lot of time because you work a lot, but you might have some spare money to spend on your hobbies. And if you want to get better quicker, like, of course, coaching is going to help. You don't need it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure you could spend tons of time and get better. And I probably would encourage you to do that yourself, because the journey to, like, I mean, figuring things out in card games is always more enjoyable. That's the fun of it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, be like, oh, I like sort of this crazy play. But if I just do the same thing that I've done 100 times, it's kind of repetitive. So I would encourage that. But I mean, if you want to get better quicker, if you hit a plateau, of course, it's going to be useful. There's also two types of coaching, I would say. There is coaching that when you're preparing for a specific event, and there is coaching where you're trying to improve overall as a player, and they're completely different. If someone's got a tournament on Saturday, like, and today is Thursday, of course, all we're going to talk about is matchups. We're going to go through knowledge. You're going to make sure you're doing that. We're not probably going to barely touch on fundamentals, right? But if you want to improve, like, extensively, then you actually have to take a different approach, right? Should be longer term, shouldn't be focused on matchups, should be focused on trying to get you to, like, learn and understand yourself and figure things out. It shouldn't just be like dumping information, because otherwise then it becomes a scam, because then it's like, you know, you could give a man a fish or teach him to fish himself. You know what I mean? Like, if you just teach someone matchup knowledge and then they become reliant on you for matchup knowledge and can't figure the stuff out themselves, then it's a scam. But you know, I mean, if someone has a tournament and they're like, I've been struggling with the Giratina matchup, I don't have much time, let's work on it, then, like, you know, you can do that, but it depends on your specific goals.
That makes sense. So in your eyes, as both an accomplished player, a coach, like, everything involved in that, there's the kind of two ways that you would go about either being a client or doing a coaching session if you are a coach. And that would be focusing on a specific, like, I want to do well at the Charlotte Regionals and I'm playing Giratina. Like, what's my 60th card? What are the like, how do I beat Charizard? And then the other one is the, hey, I've never done better than 3-5 at a regional, and I would like to convert that. And that's more of a, like, well, let's play games and figure out where your flaws are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best use of coaching is as an extra pair of eyes to try and understand where you can improve. I think that if you want to find matchup knowledge, I'm sure you could find it anywhere on the internet. I mean, maybe not anywhere. I'm sure you could find some, right? Yeah, you could definitely do it. You could watch a bunch of replays, see what pros do. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you're hitting a plateau, sometimes it's just nice having an extra pair of eyes. There's so many different, like, aspects of it as well. Like, I find with seniors, like, one of the best things you can do with coaching is actually coaching, not teaching, like, you know, like a sports coach. Because juniors sometimes need to learn, but seniors, if they're played through juniors, are usually quite good at this point, but they lack confidence. And so, like, sometimes with them, you just try and be like a motivational coach, you know what I mean? And I think it works wonders. So there's a lot of, like, trying to understand specifically what people want.
Can you talk more about that idea of a mental? Because I guess that would be the third, the third branch of the everything.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, it can go lots. I think, well, this is the thing, right? So you've got skill. Okay. Yeah. And I think, sorry, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think the best way to put this. I also want to put a disclaimer. It feels weird. When I made that video, I was very particular to not using I statements because I didn't want any of it, the discussion, to be an advertising for coaching or anything like that. So I was very careful. So it feels weird talking about it in this sense.
You can advertise coaching, here. But that's fine. I think you gave me some of your time. Yeah, no.
I don't want it. I want the discussion to be separate. You know what I mean? Okay. I don't want it to seem loaded. But basically, I think what's interesting is that I describe it as, like, some people are gamers and some people play Pokemon. And there is a distinct difference. And a difference is gamers will be up till 3 a.m. the night before a tournament and still play the tournament super fine.
That's not me.
I used to be like that. I used to be a gamer. Now I'm not. I'm 24 now. I think I'm, like, getting, you know, arthritis. Like, it's all going, man.
Bro,
I have to sleep.
You're
well
a baby.
Now, like...
No, you don't get the. Oh my goodness.
Anyway, yeah, there are different people. There are, like, people who are gamers and not, and I think that's how it changes. Because if you're not, then, you know, you have to look at things a bit more methodically. So when it comes, the reason I bring that up is essentially you have, like, a skill ceiling that you have, right? You have, like, this total pool of your skill at Pokemon, and at least from my experience, I would find that sometimes at tournaments, I can't use all of that. Some tournaments, I would be like, I didn't make a single mistake. I'm super confident. Mm-hmm. And then other tournaments would be like, man, why did I do that? I didn't do that last time. Mm-hmm. Right? And there's so many little factors that go into it. So decisions can be really like, or maybe you understand all the plays, but how much can you do it in under pressure? How much can you like react from making a mistake? Can you recover? Do you get tilted? Because there's a massive mental element. And mm-hmm. I think like the gamers in the community sometimes, I guess, dispel that because they, you know, they, oh, you just play better. But I don't think it's quite that simple. And you need to try and be working to use all of your skill available rather than playing to like 80% of it.
So would you say that there is like a group of people out there who could be mental coaches for someone who's like, I am getting tilted. Like I'm seeing the correct line of play and then I'm just doing the wrong thing because my brain is heading in the wrong direction out of nowhere. Like, is there groups of people who can help you with that?
I'm sure. I mean, I'm anyone with like a background in that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like if anyone has any experience in terms of, I mean, themselves, this is what I think you said is that when I talk about gamers, I think that maybe people haven't had to do this.
Mm-hmm.
People haven't had to like introspectively look and see what's causing them to have like, you know, performance issues within tournaments and things like that. I personally, for a long time, like I had a physical illness for a really long time, mm-hmm. Which would cause like a lot of, I'd be really sick at tournaments. And so that was one thing that it would affect it. And I try and really figure out ways to get around that. And then obviously sleep and everything like that. But it's a tough thing to learn how to help people with. Because my skills were in Pokemon originally when I started coaching. They weren't in that. They weren't in like mm-hmm. mental work and psychology and stuff. And so you kind of have to figure that out on the fly, but it's important. And I'm sure yourself, like you'd know, having like studied education to become a teacher,
mm-hmm.
how important those kind of things are as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, there's there's a massive just everything psychological is going to be a big deal. And I think that's an interesting, even going back to the accomplishments as a coach, like if that's something you're looking for, if you're like, hey, my play isn't great, but that's not my biggest issue right now. My biggest issue is whatever the mental side is. And you don't really care about the accomplishments of a player. Like if you're going to a coach and you're like, well, you've top aided 17 regionals in a row. Like that person's probably not going to be great. And they might be. But they might not be great at like, they're not getting tilted all the time because they're winning a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Or they're just like, oh, just pay more attention, right? And it's like, that doesn't work for most people out there. Like, well, if you consider just being hyper-focused, and it's like, yeah, I considered it. It doesn't work. That's not really a thing I do.
And I mean, also, there's so many different things. What if you suffer from ADHD,
mm-hmm.
but someone that you're working with doesn't understand that at all, or doesn't, you know, grasp that, or that affects you in a way that you can't quite articulate. I mean, I'm sure that is a thing as well. I would probably recommend when it comes, if this is something specifically you're looking at within a coach, I would look for someone, and obviously you want someone with accomplishments. I would look for someone who has had periods of not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
That is the best thing I can say, because then they've had to work through it too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they've managed to perform at the top level and get fantastic results, but also sometimes don't do that well, then I'm sure they've done the work to try and figure out what's going wrong. Like, and I'm sure, look at Azul. Like I think he had a streak where he missed a couple day twos in a row, and now he's on like three or four top eights in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have streaks, and that takes like, you know, to bounce back from them, it takes a lot of fortitude. So it's mm-hmm. nice to think that your coach would have experienced the same thing you're going through.
For sure, for sure. Do you have any other last second thoughts on coaching before we jump into our how to improve at the game without playing the game?
Yeah, that's the next section. I mean, it's similar. Are we going to build on some of the things?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think one last thing. I think there is an example, and this is, I guess, similar to what I've done when I've got coaching recently from people. I had one student once who I was very impressed with and really pushed me was he came in. I think I'd played him at a regionals in the States, mm-hmm. and he booked a coaching session with me, and he had like a bullet point list of exactly what he wanted to do and work on, and the exact questions he had to maximize, like I think it was only an hour, to mm-hmm. absolutely maximize the time. Absolutely. And he asked me before the session and in the session, And that really pushed it. But that is what you should do. If you are like super focused and want to get the most out of it, then you go in with a plan.
Yes.
Of exactly what you want to know and what you can get out of it. Then like, it's very clear to see if they're meeting your goals or not, rather than to just go in and let someone try and lead it. I think is the best way. If you have very clear vision on how to improve this guy came in, you're like, how do I improve this skill? What do I do for that? And some of it I had to be like, man, that's a really good question. How do you improve that? And then that pushed me to think about it, and I figured it out or had some recommendations, or maybe after the session I'd spend a couple hours thinking about it and be like, yeah, okay, that won't help. And then you message them and follow up after. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the thing. If you're thinking about it, make sure you go in prepared. And it's also your responsibility to make sure you try and get as much out of it as well.
I want to piggyback off of that, because it's both a mixture of a decade of teaching experience, master's in education, and I was also getting coached in the Pokemon trading card game. And I think all of that combines for everything you just said. One thing as a teacher is it always takes me weeks, months to get into everyone's brain to figure out kind of that, like, well, where do you need help with? How do you need help specifically? That type of stuff. Obviously, it won't take months of coaching for that to happen because it's one-on-one and et cetera, but it is not instant. Mm. You have to spend a little bit of time playing games with each other and watching what's happening and then finding the flaws versus I already know my flaws at the game, right? So I think that's a really good advice of like, I know what I need to work on. I know why I've hired you. These are the things. And that way you as a coach don't have to spend a bunch of time figuring out what the player already knows. The other one that you didn't mention, but I know is right on that list. So even before the podcast, a little behind the scenes for everyone, we're talking about Henry's love of notepads and writing things down.
I got two right here.
I would highly recommend anyone who gets coaching or anyone who is testing, write stuff down. This is something I did when I got my first coaching session, because I learned to be a good student by the time I got my master's. It took me, 12 plus 4, 16. It was the 17th and 18th year of my educational life where I finally started taking notes. And I was like, holy, this is great. If I take notes, I learn so much more. And so when I got my first coaching session, I was writing down everything, blah, 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 right? And then at the end of the session, I was like, hey, can I read back to you my notes and let you know what happened? And the coach was like, yeah, you took notes. And then I read back some of the stuff that he said, and he's like, oh, I said those things. Like, that's really smart. It's like, yeah, it was really smart. Thank you so much. But yeah, just write that stuff down so that when I was playing on my own, I could read through and I could very quickly find like, oh yeah, remember, I need to know how am I going to take my 6 prizes? Or I was a beginner player, right? So like prize mapping was very much something that I had to work on, right? Or like my resources, don't overbench. Like, how many buzzwolves do I need to win this game? Like, just 2 more buzzwolves. Like, I don't need to bench 3 more, right? So like, I just had all this stuff written down so that every game on PTCGO live nowadays that I played, I was able to look at, and I was still able to get a ton out of, instead of just blindly playing the game and being like, I'm sure this is going well. Like, no, I know it's going well because I wrote the notes down from the lesson that I paid for.
Yeah, I think the last thing I want to say incredibly briefly is also there is a lot of people and us talking positively for coaching, but also, if you want to play yourself and don't need it, you do not need it. Mm-hmm. If you want to enjoy the game as it is, if you want to figure everything out yourself, I also really recommend that as a journey as well. Don't feel pressured into it by any like, oh, all my friends are getting coaching. If it's not for you, then don't. It's not a huge deal. I think, yeah, figuring things out yourself can also be just as rewarding.
But yeah, go back about 3 months and listen to our episode with Victor, where he talks about practice versus testing and a lot of like playing Limitless Tabletop against yourself and how to take that data and actually use it to better yourself. Because if you're like, I'd like to self-coach, I think that's the fun part. Victor does talk a lot about how to do that part. So highly recommend. This podcast is sponsored by Tabletop Village. Tabletop Village is the premier Pokemon first trading card game store in the United States. And if you shop at tabletopvillage.com and you use code MELLOW5, that's MELLOW, the number 5, you will receive 5% off your order of any sealed products, any sleeves, or even other games that they have, including Yu-Gi-Oh!, One Piece, or Flesh and Blood. So be sure to shop at tabletopvillage.com. Use code MELLOW5 to help support the podcast. So one of the things that you had wanted to talk about as well was improving without playing the Pokemon trading card game. Which, when you first brought this up to me, I was like, that's so cool. Like, that is something I can use. And the more I've thought about it since you DM'd me that idea, the more I've been like, I don't entirely know what that means. So I want to preface with why I think it's a good topic. And this is me saying it. Azul on his podcast and streams has been very much like, the best way to play is to just play all the games. And it feels like there's some line in between play all the games and play no games, where there are other ways to improve and get better at the game beyond just shoving your face into PTCG Live all day. So, Henry, what else can be done besides playing until you hit Arceus rank?
Okay, well, let's build on the stuff we talked about with all the coaching, because we kind of signposted a few other things. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of fundamental skills that are useful in strategy games, especially card games, based because of the probability element, that will regardless like be useful to you. Okay, so you have a certain amount of skill in Pokemon, and you want to make sure you're using 100% of it, like we were saying, right? That's part of this, right? And there are so many other ways to use 100% of it. So I think this is a useful topic because, I mean, it's very easy, and I mean, I've been asked this before. Obviously, it's only one tournament, but the easy question for people like who aren't around, or maybe my friends who don't play Pokemon, will say, okay, you've won Worlds, like, what's next? Okay, well, let's assume that your like knowledge of Pokemon's really solid, your decks or lists that you make are really good, your play specific to Pokemon is really good. How can you go from there? So one of the ways that I've been trying to like, not one of, but some of the ways I've been trying to like maximize this is a better understanding of the maths, a much better understanding of the maths. So one of the ways I think you can really push the top skill level, and when you get to that thing, so the better you get at Pokemon, the less likely you are to win against someone of a similar skill, even if you're better, right? It's like the someone who is a 5 out of 10 at Pokemon might have a better chance to beat a 4 out of 10 than a 9 does a 7.
Okay.
It kind of curves like that. So the better you get, the less actual skill it involves, obviously, because you're playing the game better and better, and so it becomes more probabilistic. So if the way you can push the really margins is you can get really good at the maths. So what I try and practice is trying to do like actual like quick calculations. Like I'm playing, I'll think, okay, I've got 20-ish cards in deck. What's the better choice given that I have these things? And that's really tricky, obviously, to do. But even understanding it is important. So I said to you just before, because you're like, what are you talking about with this don't play Pokemon? What do you, I don't get it. You said that to me. And I was like, okay, best thing you can do, first thing you can do is do an online probability course. Series of YouTube videos. I think there's a bunch of free ones from like, you know, some of the Ivy Leagues or something. Like, there's some really good stuff. Do a very simple probability and maybe even stats course. You don't have to know the maths. You just have to understand the concepts. It's really important. Think about like, I mean, you would have seen this to death, but the whole fleet-footed versus generator. Do you remember that?
Oh, I do. I was watching James's stream the very first time when he ranted about it for like an hour. It was great. I loved it.
So the maths-wise, it makes no difference.
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no difference. Like if you fleet foot first, people go, well, if you draw an energy, then your generator's lower. Okay, well, if you don't draw an energy, then your generator's higher. So it balances out. That's like an example of the concepts you'd learn. And regardless of the maths, thinking in that way is really beneficial to card games because it's all probability. So that's super useful. So do a maths course. And there are a bunch of others. Like, I mean, you are competing, right? You are competing. What kind of things do you think are generally good if you're competing at anything?
Oh, gosh. Competing? Yeah. I don't know which way we want to go with this. There's like the actual competition, like your own mental state of like, hey, I'm in this, I want to win. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, did you see the article a while back of chess players burning something like, you know, some ridiculous amount of calories a day? You see that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what they do is they all get in like, well, I've seen some chess players and I think they all do it, but they try and get in good shape. You know what I mean? That's one. I mean, that's an example. There's stamina. Like, you know, there's a whole bunch of, I mean, now I'm sounding like a guru, but you know, like mindfulness, like anything that helps your concentration is a way you can do it. Literally anything. It could be learning chess. It could be learning an instrument. Like anything that improves your concentration, because the thing with card games, especially when it's on live, is that it is a, especially like online, like live, mm-hmm. is a video game. It's more stimulating than playing with the cards in person. There's more flashing lights. There's more like things designed to be fun and mm-hmm. engaging, right? So sometimes you can struggle actually doing that in a tournament, waiting for your opponent's turn, prize checking. So anything that helps your concentration is really mm-hmm. valuable. I know that definitely helps people. It's probably one of the best things you can do is trying to work on that. How you do it is up to you. There's so many different ways. Like, I kind of hated the whole mindfulness stuff when I first, like when I was younger, like when I played it, someone was like, you should try and work on your concentration. Surely that would help you. I'd be like, no way. But now I'm open to it. But whatever works specifically for you, I would say, is useful on that front.
I like that concentration one because, I mean, you've probably seen the exact same thing too, where you play against some people sometimes and you can see that they're not fully following what you're doing on your turn. And it's like, oh, you're not here. You're not present in the moment, following what's happening, thinking through, okay, well, how did my opponent's flower selecting change what I'm going to do? And which, I mean, to be fair, is very hard. If you're listening to this and you're like, I can't sit through a Giratina turn one because it takes too freaking long, valid. I totally understand. But being able to sit there, and I mean, if you listen to the last podcast, I mentioned beating one of the Giratina players who just kept cooking. And I was like, I should lose this game every time, but they keep throwing good stuff in the loss zone, right? The fact I'm paying attention, I'm watching every single flower selecting, and I'm watching the decisions they're making, and it's like, oh, like they are opening up a win condition for me that shouldn't be there. So it is incredibly valuable to be concentrated, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there were two tournaments. I had a pretty poor string of events the last few ones I went to. Mm-hmm. There was... So actually, this is worth talking about. The first one was Vancouver. That was the first regional that ever missed day two at, or like actually missed top 32 at. Mm-hmm. And I slept terribly. And for me, that was what I attributed it to. Mm-hmm. I slept really poorly. I was like, you know what? One game absolutely made mistakes. Like, not even a doubt. And this is useful. I lost on a 3% chance. I did the maths afterwards.
Yeah.
But I could have done something slightly different the previous turn and had 100% chance.
Oh.
And so I can't really be upset.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't be upset, right? Mm-hmm. Because like, okay, it was extremely unlikely, but it didn't need to be. It could have been certain. So I actually lost from my own big mistake. Mm-hmm. And there was another round where I lost, but I was kind of looking back on it afterwards, I was like, I don't think I made any mistakes, but I also was not in it. And so I don't think I have I don't think I was paying enough attention to know if I made mistakes or not. And so that was a good one. But then after Brazil, for example, after LAIC, I was like, you know what? No, I'm like pretty confident. This was a rough day. Mm-hmm. I had some really tough games. It just didn't draw great. Played pretty well. That's okay. I'm happy with that. But the Vancouver, I was like, man, like I got to be doing better than this. So. that's a good example, is like making sure that you're actually concentrating and blaming the right things.
I feel like that I can't even remember what misplays I made because I wasn't paying enough attention in my own game. Is look, all of us feel attacked, listeners. I feel attacked by that. Henry said that about himself. Like, we've all been there before.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And there are so many, like, I think Celio said this. Mm-hmm. There was like, I think the finals of Milwaukee, there was one match and Celio said in a chat I was in with him, he goes, Henry looks like unbelievably focused. There's no way he's losing. And that's not like, obviously that's not true. Like anything can happen in a game. But to me, I think the difference in how I felt mentally when I do really well compared to when I do average is definitely there. I definitely do feel like sometimes I'm just not in the zone. And I think that's like something to definitely useful to talk about. I feel like I don't always make use of, like I said, the whole skill that you have. And that's like the trick that you're fighting against yourself with.
I think that's something I can also say of myself. So I assume, listeners, you're in that same boat of like the tournaments where you have done well, you feel like you're in a different mind state or a different flow state of just like, I'm here. This is it. Like I've got everything's working, right? every flower selecting, quick search, whatever feels so good, and I'm fully focused on which individual move is correct to reach a goal versus I'm going to refinement some stuff and see what happens, or whatever Guardy players do. I don't know.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I think it's important. And in terms of other things you can do, because I think it's really cool to, that's what I've been trying to do, is trying to like find a bunch of things that I can improve. And I'm thinking at some point I'll make some YouTube videos like this, but because I was thinking of what I'd actually want to make. And I think that's what it would be. But I think there's so many things you can do, like we've already talked about. But one that I did is there was this situation, like a probability thing, where you would have a better chance. It was like an Archeops Lugia thing. Basically, summary of it, do you play Serena and draw three, looking for only an Archeops because you already got a way to discard it? Mm-hmm. Or do you research your whole hand, draw seven, and hope to hit Archeops and a way to discard it? So if that is relatively clear.
Yeah.
Basically, that makes sense. The answer is dependent on the ratios of cards in your deck. How many of each thing do you have? So it depends on that. But what I did is I modeled it out. I had someone help me build a little script that would do it, based that you could change. It's not super complicated. You hand by hand is a little bit tricky, but yeah, you can basically, I modeled it quickly, and then I figured out a way to see roughly which side of it I was on when I was playing. Which side of this number. So an easier example is, let's say you have I've seen a calculator that shows the chance of hitting a Pokégear based on different cards in your deck, right?
0% always, never hits.
Yeah, zero?
Zero, always zero.
So I'm going to tell you what I learned from this.
Yeah.
And this is a way to, you're improving a Pokémon by doing this without playing Pokémon, which is, again, the thesis of this topic. But basically, you have about a coin flip chance at the start of a game to Pokégear for a Colress if all four are in your deck. It's slightly above 50. Slightly above 50. So maybe, I think it's almost dead on. So, well, if because of that, do you always flower select as much as you can first? What if that by doing that, you lock yourself out of your play? So let's say you could flower select again, but it means you have to jet energy a Comfy. All right, so you're playing Giratina. But by jet energy in the Comfy, you lock yourself out of using Abyss Seeking. So would you rather gear first to see if you get Colress to keep Abyss Seeking open? Or would you rather jet to increase the chance?
What am I playing against? Are they going to hit 220 on turn two? Is that going to lose me the game? Do I have a second Giratina? Like,
exactly.
There's more questions. Yeah.
There's a million questions, but it's useful to know the breakpoints, because then you can further educate yourself on what's useful. Like, do you want to do that or not? And there's a whole lot to it, but that's quite, I mean, we're not going to get into deck specific stuff, but that's a way that something you do outside of the tournament can specifically help you, and outside of playing Pokemon can help you with decisions in game, which I think is super useful. And obviously people will say watch your games back, and obviously that's useful too, but I still kind of classify that as playing Pokemon.
There's also kind of on that math thing, there's getting too lost in the math occasionally as someone who's done this before. So my examples, as you mentioned, Pokégear and Giratina, right? It's like, all right, do you play a Pokégear or do you play like some other draw supporter, right? Like an Iono. Because then you're talking about like, well, if you could play five Colress, you could, right?
Yeah.
And my, you know, you figure out, and I figured out Pokégear is approximately half of a Colress, all things considered. And it was like, why would I use a deck slot on half a Colress versus that? And it was like, okay, well, this is terrible. I would always want an Iona over it. And then that has been something that I've kind of changed my mind on, because that initial math of Pokégear's half a Colress, Iono's one Iono, one Iono is always better. And it's like, well, you can just use the Pokégear later in the game. And then it becomes a different card, and the Iono is always the same card, right? And so sometimes you get lost in that math, and you have to really think about all those scenarios when you're doing. I know you know this, but like, there's a lot of extra stuff beyond just the like,
there is.
What's the probability of doing this? Like, well, in that one situation, it's 50%. What about all the other situations?
Yeah. What about like when the Pokégear becomes the third boss at the end of the game when you have like 10 cards in deck, right? So there's a lot to it. I think, again, this is a good example of like how some kind of probability or statistics course can help, is because it teaches that kind of thinking where you can actually interpret the data better rather than just, you know, just look at the first number you see. So that's useful for sure. The other thing as well that I think is useful, we talked about concentration, but there's a concept there's a thing with human like consciousness and intelligence, like working memory. Do you know much about that? It's just like the ability to be able to like hold things in your head step by step, is essentially what it is. And it's with executive function. So basically, I would find like when I would play poorly, or if I was a bit tired, or specifically when I was unwell for a while, it would be really poor. And when I would make mistakes, what I would do is I would go like, okay, I have to do this, then this, then this, then this. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And I'd go step 1, step 2, step 4. And I'd skip step 3. And I'd be like, there's no way. And I lost like the most ridiculous games to doing that. Genuinely the most ridiculous things. Like once I was playing Mewtwo and like I discarded the Solgaleo I needed to attack. And then I looked down and I discarded like a welder or something. And I was like, I just lost concentration. So I don't know specifically like ways to help that other than like, you know, playing certain things, but there are a wealth of resources online that would be able to help improve and train like working memory. And I think an understanding of like how concentration works is super useful.
Yeah. And that's a big one. Working memory is something that most people don't have very, like, it's not a very well-developed thing because your survival doesn't depend on a very robust set of information stored in that short-term memory, right? A lot of that is like, okay, you only need, it's what, 5 ± 2 or 7 ± 2 pieces of information stored in there at any given time. It's a pretty small number. But in Pokemon, that's not enough, right?
No.
And there's also ways in the Pokemon trading card game to minimize the amount of things you have to store in there, like looking at your opponent's discard pile. Like instead of remembering how many bosses they played, just look at it, and you can keep that information out of that piece of memory so you can focus on the other stuff, right? So there are little ways in the game too that you can kind of make that better, in addition to training it and just practicing different things. Where I mean, like you said, I'm not an expert on how to improve your memory. That is one of the few things that I'm quite good at. So it's like there's stuff out there, though, to definitely increase that a little bit for you. And then you're going to suddenly realize, like, oh, that step-by-step process, I'm remembering it even better. I'm remembering my prize cards without looking at what I wrote down quite as often. You know, things like that.
Yeah, and I think if you've ever struggled with, like, the kind of foresight and step-by-step planning, then this is what it is. It's working memory. And that's a really good way to improve it. And I guess the summary of all of this is, like, whilst you don't have to be physically fit to play Pokemon like you might a sport, there is a, like, being more mentally fit can definitely improve it for sure. There are a whole bunch of mental skills that are not Pokemon specific that will help you improve at Pokemon specifically in a tournament setting, for sure, without a doubt.
I think that's super good advice.
Sounds good.
We'll see if people actually listen to it. I'll see if I listen to it. Heck, I just talked to you about this. Like, I feel like I should be the best person. I just paid you for an hour of mental coaching session. Like, I should be good now. Henry, where can the people find you if they want more from you?
You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on, Twitter. You can look there. Basically, that's all I am at the moment.
Fair.
Probably going to launch a couple other social media platforms soon, but the only place at the moment is Twitter. So that's the best one. That's pretty much all from me. I post videos occasionally on Twitter where I talk about stuff like this, except in a little bit shorter context. So, yeah.
And so the people know, what's your next event?
My next event is Melbourne Regionals.
Ooh, when's Melbourne?
In a couple weeks. What are we from now? Like 2 weeks time? Oh, that's too soon.
just play Charizard. It's fine.
Yeah, I might.
Yo, let's go. Myself, you can find me on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube at Mellow_Magikarp. Thank you to everyone who has ever told anyone about this show. I'm bad at advertising, so if you tell a friend or a random opponent a league challenge, you are doing me a great service and helping grow the show and grow the community as well, I hope at least. This has been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast. We'll catch you all next week.